I came back to Halifax, had a well-deserved leave, and well-earned or very much appreciated, I think would be a more humble way of putting it. And I came right out here to Victoria, and I had a whole month.
Your wife was happy?
And a whole month. And then went east to have some conferences in Ottawa.
What was it like in Victoria now? When you got back here, your wife and family and things would be very pleased that,
Well, my wife was in Halifax all war.
She was in Halifax?
Yes, all war, but she came out here with me on leave. We flew out. Oh, it's kind of an interesting period, too. We flew out on the...
That's unheard of.
Yeah. And...
Which plane? Was it horses?
No. Came out in Air Canada, or whatever, TCA, as they called it in those days. I got a special pass to be allowed to fly. But we had a nice holiday here. It was very... Victoria was... they'd heard there'd been a war on. They read their newspapers. Very peaceful. You know, things you see and don't understand. See, you know, the lights coming on again. First thing you find is you come out here and there, the lights all on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the street lights all lit up. We'd walked around for 5 years with
bumping into walls.
Yeah, with no lights. So,
yeah, of course. Yeah.
Oh,
what about the food?
And all food was an interesting way. Oranges, funny enough, oranges. People would almost do anything for an orange.
Mm-hmm.
Orange was missed more than any other food. I suppose a doctor could explain why that was. It was unbelievable.
Get that orange.
An orange. I remember taking a present, a case of oranges, to Iceland one time, and there weren't quite enough to go around, so they put them all on the table and left them as decoration on the table rather than eat them. For the night I was there, anyway, I had dinner with the Bash, one of the cruisers. But
oranges were the thing.
Yeah, very much so. Oranges and probably more than anything else.
Well, you would finish your leave then April. Your April would be your leave.
Yeah.
I guess. And then you come back in May, is that correct?
I arrived in Halifax on the 2nd of May, I can still remember, 1945. And the war really was winding down.
Yes.
It really was winding down.
Well, you know what I'm getting at. Now, you'd be promoted, to captain?
I've been a captain, yes. I wonder if you'd like to hear about coming back to that.
Sure.
That
would be great.
I was put on a ship called the Queen Mary. Just being promoted to captain, I didn't have my rings on. I was waiting to get a ship. It took me 2 or 3 weeks to get a ship in England after I left Iroquois. And they found the Queen Mary was coming out with first time they were bringing out the very badly wounded. The very badly wounded. These people were...
repatriated, I guess.
No arms, blind... we had 2,000 of them, all in cots in the ship. And we were coming back with, I think, most of the trip without any escort. The battle was getting drawing to an end. And
that ship as well, right?
And yes, and we were coming out at very heavy speed, long speed. But we zigzagged all over the ocean to avoid the enemy. And so we put 2 weeks or 10 days in the ship, I think, 10 days. I've never forgotten that trip, because I'm just going to mention it for one quick word. We decided, four of us, very healthy, fit, all turning home, and we decided we'd walk for an hour, 2 hours, forenoon, through the wounded, the sick, and each morning just to chat with them. This was a lesson of a lifetime to me. We came into New York Harbor, and the night before, we were sitting having a drink, and we were just talking about the war. Never heard one word of complaint from any of these people. Some blind, some both arms, some one leg. These were all bad cases. None of them could walk. They were all cot cases, what we call cot cases. And we arrived in New York, and of course, there's nobody more wonderful than the Americans, eh? They understand what it is for that group that are in the battle. the group that get to the, as Churchill used the words, get to the front line at all costs, and they're very understanding of people who've been in the battle. I remember coming up New York Harbor in that beautiful ship past the Statue of Liberty, and speech from General Marshall welcoming these men back to North America. About 10% were Canadians and the others were Americans. Welcoming them back to America, up past the Statue of Liberty, and I remember one fellow, we called him Shorty, his legs were cut off just above the knees, he had no legs at all, and he looked over and he looked at me, he looked at me past the Statue of Liberty, he says, "Commander, it's wonderful to be back to this great country." Of course, I cried like a baby. It was just unbelievable. That was typical of the spirit of these people. Not one complaint, you know. Adversity introduces a man to himself. It's this success we've gone through for the last few years that'll kill us. If we're not down already, I don't know how quickly our civilization will disappear, but we can't take success. You know, it takes an awful big man to take success. It takes there's very few big enough to take the success we've had in the last few years. I think as our civilization fades out, it'll be this affluence.
This will
have killed us.
Must have tipped the starch out of you, but give you a greater perspective, I guess, on what you were actually doing. I guess what I'm getting at is in the Navy and in the Air Force, the wounded don't come back a lot of the time, if you know what I mean. The sea takes care of that.
That's right.
Therefore, it's just a continual going, and when they're gone, they're gone, and you don't have to...
That's right. I hadn't thought of it that way before, but that's right.
You know, as opposed to the Army around it.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I mean, that's an awful wide brush. I'm not trying to imply anything specific, but now for you to come back after... I mean, you know, the gongs you had received, the accolades, the experiences that you had, you know, survived continually time and time again, then to meet up with those that didn't have the luck with them, I guess, or for some reason, whether it was just...
Your question being?
Well, I guess it must have been a humbling experience, or did it really...
Tremendous. I thought
I was getting at it that you remember to this day.
Yes. Oh, those are the things you remember... will never forget. These are the real lessons of life. And they come from somebody like that. It comes from some humble person that your great lessons in life have always been somebody you've gone into battle with, somebody you've... experiences I told you at great length of my Christmas in Murmansk. And I repeat this one, these same words again. Adversity introduces a man to himself. Man rises to terrific heights under these difficulties. He unbelievable heights he comes to, and he's not. He becomes a very unselfish individual. I remember the Bishop Bishop Kennedy in Korea telling me that he became an archbishop. He said of all his experience in the church, his business to Vietnam and his, if your duty to God is your duty to fellow man, which is the basis of religion, your duty to God is your duty to fellow man, he said to me he learned more visiting his fellow man, and how he looked after his body, how he took care of his body, would take any risks to get his body out of out of trouble in these squalor and difficulties of the Vietnam. But we were not on that war now, and I got onto that later. But does that answer your question, or help answer your question?
I think so. We'll take a pause here for a moment, sir. We'll take a lunch break now, and we'll be back in a little bit. Thank you very much, Admiral Hibbert. My name is Chris Main. Again, I'm with Rear Admiral James C. Hibbert, DSC in Bar, CD, numerous other foreign decorations. Admiral Hibbert with the Royal Canadian Navy. We're picking up after lunch. The date today is 2nd August 1979, and we're at Admiral Hibbert's home on the water in Oak Bay. Admiral Hibbert, before lunch, we got about as far as you getting to New York and taking your holidays, but we didn't get you at Halifax yet, and so I was wondering if we could pick up at Halifax, making your way.
I took over Captain D. Halifax.
The Captain of Destroyers?
That's Captain of Destroyers. That's responsible for all ships, all ships entering and leaving Halifax, be it foreign, any navy in the world, came under my direct... I was their immediate boss, if you put it that way.
Now, how would that differ with Harbor Master and the Admiral there?
Well, the Admiral deals with the operational forces at sea,
yeah.
The strategy and tactics and the employment, and the Harbor Master deals with all matters in harbor and provisioning and all these things. I was, those people, well, to put it simply, I had to write the report for every captain that came in that harbor, what he called as a flimsy, what I thought of every captain, how I thought his ship was running. He was responsible to me, and I was his immediate boss, Captain D. Halifax. And also, incidentally, I get back to the job I had working under me. It was training commander. Remember I talked to you some time ago about being training commander? All the training came under Captain D, too.
Of course.
So,
And you would have
having the ships ready for battle came under Captain D. Halifax. I mean,
you would be only what responsible to the Admiral, I guess.
I'd be responsible to the Admiral. And but all captains that would enter the harbor would call on me, tell me their problems, tell me what their repairs needed, what training they needed for their men.
Would it be just fighting ships or merchant ships or everything?
Fighting ships, only.
Only fighting ships.
Only ships.
Now, all Allied fighting ships that entered Halifax would come under
yes.
your authority, whether they be American, British.
Yes.
I see.
The day after VE Day, I looked at my number of men I had under my direct command was 20,000. Those were all the ships at sea.
Those were the days, eh? 20,000 men.
But it came. I think Halifax could best be remembered by myself, Captain D. Halifax. Most interesting job of a lifetime.
Really?
I think it's the most interesting.
After all the experiences you've had,
yes,
that's it.
I would think that was the peak of, there were more demands on you than any other position, be it on Defense Council or Naval Board, which I was later, or Flag Officer Pacific Coast. There's no job that ever demanded more from me than Captain D. Halifax the last year of the war and preparing for the Pacific War.
Would that be because you still got one foot on the deck and another foot in the administration?
You got both feet on deck, and
what I'm getting at though is that I mean you're really connected.
You're really ships.
You're right on ship.
You're really in the battle.
You're in the battle with the ship, but you're also in the administration and very senior now, or not very
yes,
senior.
Yes, you're responsible. You're responsible if they are looked after by the manning commanders.
You're almost the go-between if you were the middleman.
That's right.
And interesting, you say. What made it so interesting? Other than, I mean, shuffling paper. I can think of shuffling paper. I guess that's not the
case. I never looked at a piece of paper, I don't think. I spent my life, I had to write little reports, but I spent my life with the men and the officers and men of the ships. They'd arrive, outline their problems, what training they needed, what repairs they needed, what their weaknesses were, why they found they were, what they required to go into battle again, and they tell me their training requirements and how many times they should go on my old battle trainer and this sort of thing. You would meet, these captains would come up one after another into your office and you would go back to their ships. You were with them. You were part of them. They were your right arm. And you were there, right arm.
Well, I guess also being just coming from being a captain, they can relate to you and vice versa. You can relate to their problems.
So. Very important to have somebody who's done the same thing.
Yeah.
This is I'll get on to that later when
This is early May now.
This is the 2nd of May.
2nd of May. And so as you're getting things ready, the wind-up of the European War, did you know it was going to be in a few days, or...?
We thought it was coming very close. We could see it posting. In fact, the first day I was there, I went in, I was called by the Admiral, Admiral Murray, Len Murray, who was CNC Atlantic, Commander-in-Chief Atlantic, never before says had Canada had a position of Commander-in-Chief. And I was called to a meeting with the mayor and people to prepare for VE Day, because they knew it would be some celebrations on VE Day.
What was the concern prior
the
con- to
the
VE
concern
Day?
Was to keep the to have a plan for Halifax on the day that we would be landing a great number of men. And
that'd be what, at Stadacona, sir?
That would be, well, the meeting was at Stadacona. This was Halifax in May 8, 1945. And I can remember clearly on the 3rd of May sitting down and discussing with the Admiral and with the mayor and authorities in Halifax, police forces, the steps that would be taken on the day.
Now, would this be under your direct command?
No, Admiral Murray's direct command. Halifax...
was under the Admiral's command.
No, well, Halifax wasn't under the Admiral's command. Halifax, the civil authority in Halifax was responsible for the maintenance of order in Halifax. This is something I could take 2 minutes on with.
Sure, certainly, sir.
The civil authority is responsible at all times.
Mm-hmm.
It's his city, and he's responsible. Now, you have thousands of people here. Many of them in uniform, some not too much training, some, these weren't all seasoned men under well-disciplined people at all. And I want to make very clear that looking back, and I don't want to be critical of Admiral Murray, he carried a tremendous responsibility in the war, but it was not made clear at that meeting who was responsible for that city. The mayor was still responsible, and I think it would have been better to have had a clearer... a clearer understanding by the city what was required by the military, who were the people going to be there that day in the thousands and thousands. Now, I'll give you a little example of that. I would blame the Navy, to this extent, is not saying to the mayor and getting a direct answer from him, you will open your beer parlors, you will open your liquor vendors, you will keep the city wide open. This is the end of a 6-year war, and these people are going to be prepared to celebrate it a little bit. And they're not too happy being here. I don't think we ever came to that question. I was too junior, I was captain, and the Admiral and the Commodore were both there. And I would have nailed the mayor, and it was a lesson to me of a lifetime. Are you going to be responsible? What are you going to do? And will you do the following? Take the following steps. Those words never, were never, in my mind, came out. There was sort of, oh, this or that, and there'll be a celebration here, and
committee indecision, sir? Would you call it that? Committee indecision?
Yes. You don't run anything by a committee. I didn't run a ship as a committee. I ran it as a captain. And this was the thing. I must
well,
say...
What about the freedom of the city business now? Did the Navy have freedom of the
no,
city?
No.
No, because like now here, I know in town here, Esquimalt doesn't have a freedom of the city.
No.
Now, I'm wondering if that would come...
Well, that's an honorary. That's an honorary thing. This time, I don't think this applies to what you're talking about.
Good.
But I want to make clear now that the Navy took quite a rap on this. And the headlines of the Halifax papers said, Navy's failure to keep men off the streets blamed for VE Day riot. Now, would you expect to keep your Navy off the streets in a city at the end of a 6-year war? I repeat, the exact cause... Navy's failure to keep men off the streets blamed for VE Day riot. Lack of planning, says Kellogg. This was a Kellogg Royal Commission into the investigation. You may have remembered Kellogg was sent down, Mr. Justice Kellogg was sent down to investigate this.
Well, how did the riot, now, what I want to get at, sir, is this, is that the day before, or a few days before, you had this meeting with the mayor, you were there as Captain D, the Admiral, the Commodore were both there, the Mayor, and we're discussing arrangements, if you will, and nothing was really nailed down, as you say.
No. I would say the lack of a distinct the plan. Mr. Kellogg could be very right in making that report.
Now the day itself, now we're talking about the 9th of May, is it?
Yes.
Now, on the 9th of May...
The 7th, 8th of May.
8th of May, I'm sorry. When did you get the news and what happened? Where were you? What I'm getting at is, where were you? And what could you see from your vantage point?
The 8th of May, the VE Day was declared a holiday. And all my men, every ship I had in my command, was given a holiday except for the duty watch on board. They all went ashore.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the barracks, the same with the army, and same with the airport. And everybody was given a complete holiday. Well, they found themselves...
What time? Would this be in the morning, the afternoon, do you recall?
Yes, I think about 10 in the morning, something like that.
Okay.
Very, very well. It was 10 in the morning next year. I was going to go fishing. Yeah. And it was a... First thing we knew was the people went downtown and they went to the liquor vendors to buy a bottle. They found they were closed. They went to the beer parlors. They found they were closed. They went to the many of the restaurants. The city had given a holiday too, and everything was getting closed everywhere. Well, the men started to get a little restless on this, and they went around and they broke into a beer parlor. And then the next thing they knew, they said, well, you know, there's Olin's brewery around here. They got lots of beer. And at about noon or something of that nature, 12, 1 o'clock, Thursday, they broke into Olin's brewery. Well, Olin had a huge brewery, and you've heard of Olin's breweries. And they broke into that. And then they, it grew from there. I don't know whether you know, if you've ever studied mob psychology. Mobs are terrifying things. I won't get onto that in too much detail now, but mob psychology. Once you get a mob, then they said, well, let's go for the liquor vendors. And they broke into the liquor vendors. Well, then you couldn't stop it. And you had it. These aren't sailors. These are soldiers, civilians, and all... All walks of life.
Well, I know it was blamed on the Navy entirely, and there was more to it.
Oh, goodness. These were everybody. And,
well, where were you out fishing, or were you...
No, I stayed in Halifax. I saw that things were getting out of hand, and I went back to my ship, and I'll tell you about that later. But I could see that the situation was really by... I went to a memorial service and a parade at Citadel Hill at about... 2 o'clock, and you could see the situation was getting out of hand in Halifax. So I got in my car and went back to my Captain D's office and took charge for what I could from there.
What, would you stop all leave and things, or?
Too late to stop all leave. They were all ashore.
Would you organize patrols around the...
Oh, yes. I organized it. Every man from my ship. My team got off pretty well at the inquiry. Kellogg cried. I organized for every man coming back to my ship to be, if he had any loot or anything, to be arrested right away and to be responsibility and charged. Every man in my command was charged right away. I think I'll be able to read you my evidence. But I'm going to tell you what the Kellogg report said about this riot. I'm going to tell you.
Before we get that, sir, seriously, if we can... Get your day that day, where you were, the measures that you took, and then go to the aftermath, if you will, because the Kellogg report comes out afterwards.
I went to the service of Thanksgiving. The war was declared officially over by the CNC, you know, the usual ceremonies. Speeches from the king were read, and speeches from the prime minister, and all these matters, all these ceremonies. And I went back to my apartment, got in the car, and went down to my office right away. That must have been about 3 o'clock. 4 o'clock. And as I drove through the outskirts of the city, the edges of the city, not through the downtown, and I could see a situation was unbelievable. Oh, proportions was growing. You should talk to my wife about this. She saw it downtown the next day. The whole of Halifax was in one complete mess. Shops were broken into, windows were broken, a complete sweep. And the Navy, don't think I'm not suggesting for one moment the Navy was blameless. They were completely in the start of this thing, but the real thing took it over by a bunch of hooligans afterwards. And people in naval uniform were really hooligans. People who hadn't even been to the fight or in the battle, you know. People from the shore establishments and those sort of people. They were celebrating here to all get out too. And they weren't too happy about Halifax. They'd been a little lonely there. Pretty hard for a city to be host to thousands and hundreds of thousands of merchant navy, sailors, and everything else. And you know, it's pretty big. Halifax is a very fine group of people, but it's a lot to throw on one city to have 6 years of war.
Well, when you got to your office, sir, you're in the Captain D's office.
Yes.
Most of your establishment had been given leave. What were the first things you would do?
I gave orders to every commanding officer to take immediate steps to check everybody coming into the dockyard, returning to their ships, and to see that anybody who'd been doing looting or had anything to do with this was put under arrest and action was taken and charged. I was determined that my men were going to be charged.
Now, when you say your men, would that be all
the destroyers, all the corvettes, all the frigates, all the ships of any nation in harbor?
Any nation in harbor. And that's when you say your men, you just don't mean your shore establishment.
No.
You're talking about...
No. And I was...
You weren't about to try and find them and bring them back.
No, I just wanted them charged if they came in with loot or were involved in any of the upsets that were going on at the time.
You were in no position to go out after them, is that right? Like organized shore patrols to hustle them?
It was way past that. Later on in the afternoon, about 5 o'clock, my wife was reminding me at lunch today that Admiral Murray, who was in CNC Atlantic, went around in a car and said, "This is your admiral speaking. I tell all men to return to their ships and establishments," which are very degrading thing for a CNC to have to do, but he went around in an open loudspeaker in a car with a patrol through Halifax, telling them to get back to their ships. I think that at this stage, would you like to hear?
What happened? What I'm getting at is, when did the admiral give you a call?
He and I were in contact all day.
All day?
No, I had my job to do, and I hadn't seen him since the the parade on the Citadel Hill.
Well, when was it over, as far as you were concerned, sir?
2 months later, when the firing was over.
No, but I mean on the day itself.
That day, I stayed down there all night, and I sent for all my captains. I sent for everybody. Everybody within the ships were terribly upset. These men in these ships were joined to fight a war and to win it. They weren't here to destroy Canada, and they were great men, and they were fine men. This thing had got out of hand by a bunch of hooligans. Admittedly, some of them were in uniform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had old types. Remember, we never had more than about 25% of our sailors at sea all war. You've got to remember, the pointy end of this thing is...
Is a small end.
Mm-hmm. Your
captains would be coming in and reporting.
Oh, yes.
And people were being questioned and searched for loot when they returned.
That's right.
And
charges
were laid. Do you recall how many or what kind of numbers of charges were laid?
I can't remember, but it was a reasonably small number of my men were involved in this. Of the sea-going ships, a reasonably small number of my people were involved in this. I think I could... it was a very small percentage. I thought Mr. Justice Kellogg hit the nail on the head when he said, lack of planning seen by Kellogg. But Mr. Abbott, who was in our Minister of Naval Defense, and Mr. Kellogg, on his report of the V-Day riots, I think covered it fairly clearly. He was a little too lenient to the city for not taking charge of their city. Now, had you wanted the services to take charge of that city, not beyond our capabilities of handling it, but you've got the civilian control. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in Canada, we're always very conscious of this.
Separation.
This goes back, if you've studied the history of the services in Canada, you'll find they're very, very jealous of always remaining in control of the military. They don't want to let the military have one more step, take one more step than is absolutely essential.
Yeah.
And I haven't got the answers to the question as to whether or not we should have taken over charge of the city. I think we should have. The mayor should have called on the services to take charge right away. Maybe the Riot Act should have been read. That I think that would have been probably. And then as soon as the Riot Act read, we take over. You understand that, those procedures, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as soon as the minute the Riot Act is read, and the mayor is allowed to read that, we take over. I think if we'd stepped in quickly. Mob psychology is a terrible thing.
We could have nipped it in the bud,
We could have nipped it in the bud. Mr. Kellogg says, would you like to hear what he's had to say?
Certainly.
The full text of the Kellogg report on V-Day riots in Halifax and Dartmouth is published in today's paper. It's unnecessary here to analyze the voluminous document. It is there, it speaks for itself. It will read with care and close interest by the whole of the public. There's enough here at the moment to say, so far as the report itself is concerned, it confirms what was already well known. The citizens of this community, who were eyewitnessing in thousands to the rioting and smashing and looting of May the 7th and 8th, had seen naval discipline in this community deteriorating before their eyes, realized that what the commissioner describes as the passive conduct of the naval command was not confined to the period of actual disorders. Now, that's a hard, hard statement, but I'll go on. This report by Mr. Justice Kellogg of the Supreme Court of Canada disposes once and for all of the slanders, the abuse that have been spread and broadcast throughout the country and beyond its borders concerning this community and its people. It is most earnestly to be hoped that the press of Canada will give adequate summaries to the Kellogg report as much as space to some Canadian newspapers and periodicals are given to the fantastic yarns painted the citizens of the community as a band of mercenaries bent only upon getting money from service personnel and without appreciation of what hospitality means. The Kellogg report is written in plain language. It has only to be read to be understood. It goes on. Let us hasten to recognize, let us not forget that Mr. Kellogg did not hang the responsibility on the Canadian Navy. He did not hang the responsibility on the Canadian Navy. The responsibility, so far as the Navy is concerned, rests in the findings of the Commissioner with one, naval command in this area, and two, elements of naval personnel were small in numbers compared with the many thousands of personnel within the area on those days. That doesn't mean the Navy, which for the most part is made up of young Canadians who would scorn to be parties to such disgraceful acts of violence. The Minister of Defense for Naval Service says in relation to the riots, it should be remembered that many of the naval ratings who took part in these unfortunate disturbances are the same men who have earned the country's gratitude for their courage and endurance in a long and arduous Atlantic campaign. And two, the importance of the services rendered to the Allied cause by the officers and men of the Canadian West Atlantic Command can never be exaggerated. The minister did not need to say that. Everyone knows, everyone certainly who lives here by the sea knows the Navy and its magnificent performance. it is quite unnecessary for the minister to go all his way to say that. It is unfortunate that he said it. It might be construed by some as an attempt to make a case for those responsible for what happened in this community on May the 7th and 8th. To use the splendid record of the Canadian Navy as a whole, a few of those violent and vicious conduct brought to reign a terror to this community during the V-Day period. The first to denounce the conduct of that few are the rank and file of the Navy personnel themselves. It is going to be difficult to convince the citizens of this community that any considerable number of good, upstanding fighting men with sea time and sea service had a hand in the rioting and smashing and looting. They are just not built that way, not the men of the Canadian Navy, as this community knows them well. They are in uniform to protect their country, not to smash it up. They had no part in the riots. They deplored and denounced the riots, and they have no desire to be bracketed with those who did the rioting, smashing and looting. The few described by the Admiral himself as undisciplined men in naval uniform. He would not do them the honor of calling them naval ratings. I think that sums it up. I think that sums it up very well. And
Now, was there any repercussions against Admiral Murray for this?
Oh, yes. He was relieved right away. Never served again.
He was what? Retired?
He was retired. This is your service for you. And I take a plug all the time when I'm talking to you people on these matters. I read you one time what it meant to be a captain. I told you from the day I was a cadet getting my uniform to the day I was captain of the Ontario, every day had been training me for captain. A captain is the thing that matters. We are held responsible for everything that goes wrong. The senior officer is held responsible. If there's not enough salt in the soup, the captain's responsible. The V-Day riots, the commanding officer's responsible. Not like a company. I wish industry would do this a little bit more. A board of directors hasn't got a clue what's going on. Mm-hmm. All they know is what management tells them. I don't know how your university runs. I don't know whether the president knows what's going on, but I will won't get into that. But we are responsible. There's some man responsible. He puts a ship ashore, he's court-martialed. He doesn't court-martial the others, he's court-martialed. Now, you see, this is... Now I want to say a word on civilian control versus military control. I'll give you San Francisco. I'll read you exactly what happened in San Francisco when the same thing happened. A San Francisco grand jury here this morning absolved all parties concerned of blame for heavy property damage and accidents in which 13 persons lost their lives and 1,000 were injured during a three-night peace riots here 2 weeks ago. The jury made its report at the conclusion of the hearing instigated by District Attorney Edward Brown. Rear Admiral Wright, Commandant of the 12th Naval District of San Francisco, declined Brown's invitation to even appear before the jury and refused to send a member of his staff to the jury. However, Admiral Wright answered a series of written questions, Brown said, in which he implied that the blame for the riots rested with the San Francisco Police Department and that the Navy had notified police chief earlier the situation would be out of control. Now, I think had the Admiral either told the mayor it will be out of control or asked the mayor what he'd done, it's easy to be wise afterwards. It would have been better, but here we lost 13 lives and 1,000 people injured. There wasn't one life lost in Halifax. And
if the Admiral in Halifax was relieved, we had a Royal Commission. The Navy walked around with egg on its face, and yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the. As far as my men were concerned, I have here somewhere in this scrapbook that my wife made up during the book, the actual evidence I gave at the inquiry, but I was absolutely... Mr. Kellogg's report was simply wonderful to my ships. The men who fought the battle got off literally scot-free.
It was a sure establishment of young recruits.
That type of and civilians.
Now, the captain of Stadacona will be replaced as well, because Admiral Adams comes in as Captain Stadacona after the Rhine.
Yes.
And
he was relieved.
And then Admiral Adams takes his place. I'm trying to think.
Admiral Adams did an excellent job on VJ Day.
Yes.
He kept everybody in there, gave them free beer, and got all the girls in, and beer and girls, they had a wonderful time. And
no problems at all.
Why go out when you got all you can drink and all the pretty girls you need? Well, they celebrated in there.
Mm-hmm. Stadacona.
Yes.
He was using his head, I guess.
Yes, it's a good way of doing it, I think.
Well, this whole fiasco, I guess, would leave a very sour taste in that.
Oh, very.
After 6 years of war, to have it all end up.
Very sad. Very sad. Yeah.
How was the relations with the town after this point, sir?
Well, they were strained. I don't think they'll ever forget it. And of course, shortly after that, too, we had another little problem in Halifax.
Which was?
The Halifax second explosion.
Mm.
That was a bit rough, too. Those here were my ship's ammunition. Now, I'm just going to tell you about that.
Sir, could we hold on for 30 seconds while
yes.
I change the tape? We're just about out of tape here.
Right.
Admiral Hibbert, I'll get the new tape on and we'll continue on with after the E-Day riots.